All right, let's jump into this deep dive. Today we're looking at Lamentations 3.1.16, and we've got Dr. Leslie Allen's lectures to help us unpack it all. You know, it's amazing how these ancient texts, sometimes you think, oh, they're so old, but they can still offer these incredibly relevant insights into, well, like today, how we express suffering and how we find transformation through it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Lamentations, especially chapter 3, it's often misunderstood. You know, people want to just simplify it into like a message of hope, but it's really a much deeper, more intricate journey through grief.
I'm intrigued, yeah. So Dr. Allen, she breaks down chapter 3 into sections, testimony, reflection, sermon, even a call to prayer. And for this deep dive, we're focusing on that initial testimony in verses 1-16. And one thing that really jumped out at me right away was the shift in voice. The voice of Zion that was so prominent earlier in the book, it's silent here. Now we've got this male figure who Dr. Allen identifies as a mentor.
Yeah, and that shift is really critical for understanding this whole passage. You know, it seems pretty likely that this is the same mentor figure from earlier chapters, you know, guiding the people through their grief. And Dr. Allen, she points to some textual clues like similarities in language and themes. But what's really fascinating to me is that this mentor is presented as a wounded healer. It's a concept from psychology coined by Carl Jung.
Okay, yeah, I've heard of that term before, but could you break it down for me? How does it apply to this mentor figure?
Sure. So Jung said there are two ways someone can be a wounded healer. First, they can be wounded by listening to other people's suffering, just overwhelmed by all the pain they encounter. And the second way is being wounded, but still being able to heal because of their own experiences. They've been through the fire themselves, so to speak, and come out on the other side.
Okay, that makes sense. So how does the mentor in Lamentations, how does he fit into this?
Well, he embodies both aspects of the wounded healer. He's clearly really deeply affected by the suffering that he sees all around him. But it's his own past pain that makes him uniquely equipped to guide others through their grief. Dr. Allen even compares it to Alcoholics Anonymous, where, you know, the idea is it takes one who has suffered to truly help another who is suffering.
Yeah, that's a powerful connection. Makes me think about how someone who hasn't experienced that depth of pain, they might not have the same credibility or ability to connect with those who are hurting.
Exactly. That shared experience is key to building trust and opening the way for healing.
And this brings us to all those incredibly powerful metaphors that are used in verses 1-16. I mean, it's like this torrent of imagery, rods of wrath, darkness, sickness, imprisonment, wild animals, arrows. It's almost overwhelming to read. Why use such intense metaphorical language?
It certainly is evocative. Metaphors, you know, they have this unique ability to express suffering because they really tap into our emotions and they create these vivid pictures in our minds, almost like you're experiencing the speaker's emotional state more directly than plain language ever could.
So it's not just describing the suffering, it's inviting us to feel it.
Precisely. It's very similar to the way the psalm expressed that raw agony of human suffering and the questioning of God. It's not about sugarcoating the experience. It's about being real and acknowledging the depth of that pain.
So by sharing this really intensely personal lament, the mentor, he's kind of establishing his credibility, like saying, I've been there. I understand what you're going through.
Absolutely. He's laying bare his own wounds to connect with those who are hurting. I mean, think about it. If someone who had never experienced grief tried to comfort you in your time of sorrow, would you find them as relatable as someone who has walked a similar path?
Probably not. There's definitely a level of authenticity that comes with having actually gone through something difficult. So this outpouring of grief from the mentor, as raw as it is, it actually serves a purpose. He's not just wallowing in his pain. He's using it to build a bridge to those he wants to help.
You've hit the nail on the head. It's like he's saying, because I've been through this darkness, I can help you find your way out.
So we've got this incredibly powerful and personal testimony. But how does it fit into the larger message of Lamentations 3? Does this focus on suffering, does it contradict the idea of hope and restoration that we often associate with the Bible?
That's a great question. And it leads us to one of the most misunderstood aspects of Lamentations. A lot of people want to just skip over the pain and jump straight to the comfort. But the reality is that this initial testimony, while it is focused on suffering, it actually lays the groundwork for a much deeper message of repentance and restoration.
So he's not just lamenting for the sake of lamenting. There's a bigger purpose at play here.
Exactly. And to understand that purpose, we need to look closer at the structure of the chapter and see how this initial testimony sets the stage for what's to come.
This is where it gets really interesting. Let's dive deeper into that structure. and see how this mentor figure uses his own experience to guide the people toward a path of healing and hope.
You know, it's fascinating how this initial testimony really sets the stage for the rest of the chapter. Dr. Allen points out that the mentor's willingness to acknowledge his own suffering and even his own past guilt, it's really crucial for us to understand the message of the whole chapter.
So by sharing his pain, he's not just seeking comfort, he's actually laying the groundwork for something much bigger.
Exactly. This raw outpouring of grief, it really prepares the way for a call to repentance and confession that comes a little bit later in the chapter. It's like he's saying, look, I've been through this darkness, I've questioned God, but I also found a way back to hope and healing, and so can you.
It's really remarkable how this ancient text can speak to the human experience of suffering in such a profound way. And you can't help but be drawn into the story through those incredibly vivid metaphors. I mean, each one is like a punch to the gut.
It's interesting you say that Dr. Allen emphasizes the sheer abundance of metaphors in these verses. She suggests that they're serving a very specific purpose here.
What do you mean?
Well, she argues that the mentor is deliberately piling up these dramatic, almost sensational metaphors to really grab the attention of his listeners. Remember, this is a community that's reeling from unimaginable loss and trauma. Their faith has been shaken to its very core, so the mentor needs to capture their attention. He needs to make them really hear what he has to say.
So he's using these powerful images almost to shock them into paying attention.
In a way, yes, he's using the language of suffering to connect with them on an emotional level, to really show them that he understands the depths of their pain. Dr. Allen draws a fascinating parallel to a modern-day pastor who, while officiating his own son's funeral, began his sermon by saying, "I have been where life hurts the most and cuts the deepest and hits the hardest. Therefore, listen to me."
Wow, that really sends chills down my spine. It makes you realize that this need to express and process grief, it transcends time and culture.
Exactly. The human experience of suffering, it's universal. And this mentor figure, by bearing his own soul and using this raw, evocative language, he's inviting his listeners to embark on this journey of healing with him.
It's also interesting how he frames his suffering in relation to God. He talks about God's wrath, about feeling punished and abandoned. Isn't that a bit risky, considering he's trying to lead these people back to faith?
Yeah, that's a really insightful observation, and it's something that scholars have debated for centuries. Is this an accusation against God? Is the mentor portraying God as cruel and uncaring?
Yeah, I mean, some of the language is pretty intense, like when he describes God as a bear lying in wait or an archer aiming his arrows.
Yeah, those are definitely jarring images. But Dr. Allen argues that we need to understand this language in the context of the whole book and more broadly within the tradition of lament songs.
So this way of speaking about God, this wasn't unusual.
Not at all. In fact, there are many songs where the speaker expresses very similar feelings of anger, confusion, and even resentment towards God. They rail against God's silence. They question his justice, and they plead for relief from their suffering.
So by using this kind of language, the mentor is actually aligning himself with this long tradition of faithful lament. He's not afraid to express those raw, unfiltered emotions that come with experiencing profound loss.
Exactly. He's demonstrating that it's okay to wrestle with God, to question, to cry out in pain. In fact, that's often the starting point of true healing and spiritual growth.
It's like he's giving them permission to be honest with God about their pain and doubt, which is something we don't always see modeled in religious contexts.
That's a great point. And it's this raw honesty that gives him the credibility to then guide the people toward repentance and confession. It's like he's saying, look, I've been through the darkness, I've questioned God, but I've also found a way back to hope and healing, and you can too.
So this initial testimony, while it is deeply personal and emotionally charged, it's also a powerful theological statement.
Absolutely. It challenges our assumptions about how we should approach God in times of suffering. It suggests that true faith isn't about suppressing our doubts and pain, but about bringing them honestly before God.
And that's such a powerful message, especially in a world that often tells us to put on a brave face and pretend that everything's okay. It's like we're being given permission to grieve, to lament, to question.
And in doing so, we open ourselves up to the possibility of transformation.
So we've talked about the structure of this passage, the role of the mentor as a wounded healer, and the power of metaphor. But I'm curious, what makes this passage relevant to us today? How can we connect with these ancient words on a personal level?
That's a fantastic question, and one that I think gets to the heart of why Lamentations continues to resonate with people across centuries and cultures. While the specific historical context of the book might be different from our own, the human experience of suffering, it's universal. We all face loss, disappointment, pain, and grief at some point in our lives.
So even though we might not be facing the same kind of devastation as the people in Lamentations, we can still relate to that raw emotion and the struggle to find meaning in the midst of suffering.
Exactly. And I think that's one of the most powerful things about this passive. It shows us that it's okay to not be okay. It's okay to wrestle with God, to question, to doubt, to lament. In fact, that's often the starting point of true healing and spiritual growth.
That's such a refreshing perspective. It's like we're being given permission to bring our whole selves to God, even the messy, broken parts.
Precisely. And I think that's something that can be incredibly liberating and empowering when we stop trying to pretend that everything's fine and allow ourselves to be honest with God about our struggles. We open up a space for real connection and transformation.
That makes me think about how we often try to avoid difficult emotions, especially in our spiritual lives. But Lamentation seems to suggest that facing those emotions head on is actually essential to finding healing and hope. It's almost like there's this unspoken rule that faith has to always be positive and upbeat. But Lamentations shows us that there's this whole other side to our relationship with God, a side that embraces the full spectrum of human emotion.
Right. And I think that's exactly what makes this book so powerful and so relevant for us even today. It gives us permission to be real with God, to bring our doubts and fears and questions to Him without feeling like we're doing something wrong.
Yeah, it's definitely challenging how I think about faith and how we're taught to approach God. It's almost like the mentor in Lamentations is modeling a more authentic way of being spiritual, one that acknowledges the messiness of life and how complex our relationship with God can be.
You've hit the nail on the head. He's not afraid to show his vulnerability or express his anger and frustration, even question God's justice. And by doing so, he's creating space for others to do the same.
This deep dive has been a real eye-opener for me. It's made me realize that Lamentations, it's not just about sadness and despair. It's also about hope and resilience and the power of faith to carry us through even the darkest times.
It truly is incredible how these ancient texts can still speak to us after thousands of years. What resonated with you the most from this section? Was it the wounded healer concept, the metaphors, or the way the mentor sets the stage for a deeper conversation about sin and repentance?
Honestly, it's all been so thought-provoking. The idea of the wounded healer, someone who uses their own pain to help others, is just incredibly powerful. And how the mentor uses all these vivid metaphors to paint such a raw and honest picture of his suffering, it's both disturbing and strangely comforting at the same time. Like he's saying, it's okay to feel this way, you're not alone.
That's beautifully said, and I think that's the message we can all take away from Lamentations. It's a reminder that suffering, well, it's part of being human, but it doesn't have to be the end of the story. We can find hope and healing even when things are really tough by being honest with God and with ourselves, by acknowledging our brokenness, and by letting ourselves be comforted and guided by others who've been through similar things.
Yeah, it's definitely a perspective I'll be holding on to as I keep exploring Lamentations and even as I deal with my own challenges in life.
And as you do, here's a final thought to ponder. Imagine you're part of that ancient congregation, listening to the mentor share his story so raw and vulnerable. How does it affect you? Does it make you more open to what he's saying? Does it make you think about your own experiences with pain and with faith?
Wow, what a powerful image to leave us with. It really makes us put ourselves in the shoes of those who first heard these words and think about how their struggles and their hopes might reflect our own.
It reminds us that even though these texts were written thousands of years ago, they still speak to something deep inside of us. They remind us we're not alone in our suffering, that there's hope even in the darkest of times, and that true faith isn't about having all the answers. It's about being willing to ask the tough questions and wrestle with the difficult things in life and our relationship with God.